Let a healing voice be heard. When peace is shattered, when war sounds, let a healing voice be heard. I told you a little of the story of Joseph Moore, who wrote Silent Night. I was shook when I read that his father had abandoned him and his mother before Joseph was even born. I did not know that. Because his father had not married his mother, Joseph at that time needed special dispensation to enter seminary and become a priest. Later in his life, he formed a school for poor children. This at a time in Europe, as in the United States, when you had to pay to go to school. And it is said that he donated almost all of his salary year after year after year to poor children. Changes the song for me. It's not just a ritual or a pretty picture of a sleeping child. It's a cry from his heart, a life of repair to the damage done. The school that he founded stands to this day, educating children for free. 31 years after Joseph Moore wrote Silent Night, a Unitarian minister, Edmund Sears, wrote another Christmas song. Sears had been on the fast track for ministerial success in the middle of the 19th century in Unitarianism. He had served on the wild frontier to make his bones, Toledo, Ohio, way out west. And then he served a small Unitarian church in Wayland, Massachusetts. And then he was called to serve the larger church in Lancaster, Massachusetts, down the road. Big church, busy, overworked, stressed, and melancholy. He had a breakdown. The church expected too much and provided too little help. He left, and he wound up a few years later preaching part-time back in the Wayland church when he could manage. He was distressed about his own life and the state of the world, too. The war with Mexico, which seemed so arbitrary and unnecessary. The revolutions and violence in Europe. The grinding poverty of so many around the world. But Christmas was coming. He stood outside under the stars, needing to think of what to preach about. Preach something about the glorious song of old, but how do you do that when the woes of sin and strife and the din of war sound so loud? Yet beneath the stars of that night, his deeper hope and his deeper longing for peace o'er all the earth shall its ancient splendors fling. So wrote the poem. A friend set it to music, and they sang it. A few years later, he was back on his feet and doing well in the ministry, serving that church in Wayland, Mass. Still, Sears would preach a sermon condemning the brand new fugitive slave law and the institution of slavery, a sermon so clear, so strong, and so compelling that it was one of the most popular materials that the abolitionists reprinted and distributed to the public to make the case. So here are two men, men of the cloth, men of poetry and heart, men whose pain and whose loss, whose trouble does not defeat them, though it causes challenges, whose poems set to music take us to a different place each holiday season, a deeper place, past the surface of fake cheer to the longing of the pain and the hope. Men whose lives spoke as much as their words, too. Denise Levertov in that beautiful poem reminds us that peace isn't something you just impose on the world. It's lived in each stanza. As we try out new metaphors and daily living and kind words, each act a facet of the forming crystal. Peace isn't the destination, it's the way, says both Gandhi and King, and Jesus too, for that matter, though some of his disciples believed he would take up the sword and defeat the Romans, he had different aims. They read back to Isaiah and the other language and thought, oh, here comes the one who will end all war. But instead, it was a question of the heart. These men's stories could be repeated over and over again. They took their hurts, their wounds, their pain, their fear, and their longing and transformed it, gave their hope the stronger note, were moved and moved others toward solidarity instead of separation, toward love instead of hate. But that isn't always the way it goes, is it? The watchword of the day is this: trauma that is not transformed is transmitted. Trauma that is not transformed is transmitted. Does it seem to you that untransformed trauma is being transmitted in our world? Sure seems that way to me. The pain of isolation unhealed leads to division and blame and oppression and violence. Children learn pain and repeat it. Leaders desperate to be loved become authoritarians who demand it. Violence in one place makes families flee only to encounter more violence where they go. The saying, sometimes attributed to Lao Tzu, that if we want peace in the world, we must have peace in the heart, is 100% correct. And also 100% correct is this: more peace in the world leads to less pain and more peaceful hearts. We can have a vicious cycle where pain causes pain causes pain, or we can create virtuous cycles where acts of love and healing and peace create more love and healing and peace, transform pain into caring, and shift the story stanza by stanza. I am less and less interested in saviors, in new heroes, in philosopher kings, or the reign of reason. I'm interested in grassroots connections, in nurturing health, in people who transform their own pain and work with others to transform theirs. I'm interested in neighborhoods and communities, in groups of friends, and people who turn off the TV and put down the phone and talk to each other. I'm interested in art and music and playgrounds and forest preserves. One of the ideas that's capturing the attention of a lot of my colleagues is called emergent strategy. A lot of people are doing this work, and there's a good book about it if you want to learn more about it, by a woman named Adrienne Marie Brown, helpfully titled Emergent Strategy. Drawing on the ideas of process theology, quantum mechanics, ecological science, and grassroots organizing led mostly by women of color, emergent strategy presents a different method of working for peace and justice. It's the next generation of the idea that peace isn't the destination, it's the way. Goes deeper into the question of what does it mean to organize in that way, to live in that way. It says, following Octavia Butler, that we shape change and change shapes us. And in thousands of small ways, we can shape change to reduce harm and nurture love. It values interdependence, curiosity, and daily living, not new dictators or different arrangements of power. It's not peace through strength. It's peace through love, through connectivity, through relationship. You know, right, that the survival of the fittest business is incorrect? You know that, right? At least incorrect if we mean fittest to mean toughest or strongest, as we typically understand it. That's totally wrong. It's not the way the science works at all. Fittest means most fit for the environment, most cooperative, most adaptable, able to play well with others. Think about the social movements that really work, the ones that aren't a passing fad or a cult of personality, It's about the patient work of connecting, telling stories, shifting narratives. It's not home runs, it's ground ball singles. Real change doesn't come from 10-point plans. They can sometimes help, but not always. It comes from organic, adaptable, moving efforts of people who are connected to each other. Another thing I love about emergent strategy and the way that it leads us to peace is that we don't all have to do the same thing. We should do lots of different things. Because part of what leads to peace and justice is folks following their gifts and doing what you need to do today. So some of you will want to focus on healing your hearts. Some of you might offer compassion to another. Let a healing voice be heard. Some of you will teach children or make art or sing or tend gardens or organize people or write, or donate, or be a good neighbor. The way forward is varied and open to many. The dreams of peace are many, not one. The voices we need to hear blend in harmony, varied notes of love and care. The poems we need, the metaphors we need are many, not one. The people around the table of community need to be many, as beautiful and different as the facets of a multicolored crystal. Let a healing voice be heard. This Advent season, this season of peace, when the angel songs and the din of war and fear compete for airtime, I invite you to be a healing presence in the world, to help shape change in ways that are healing and healthy and peaceful. What does that look like? Only you can answer that for yourself. Only you can write those new stanzas. But I can imagine some possibilities that might spark your thinking. Just like Sears questioned the Mexican-American War in the 1840s, it might look like questioning the logic of war and saying, the lives of Yemeni children are more important than arms sales. Let that healing voice go out and be said out loud. Call your member of Congress and join that growing chorus. Sears, writing against the Mexican-American War, reminds us, of course, that the border that some folks want to protect sits on stolen land, stolen by the United States from Mexico, and stolen by the Spanish conquistadors before that. We didn't cross the border crossed us, as they say. A healing voice would cry out, it is wrong to tear gas children. It is wrong to put children in cages. The story of Christmas means anything if the sacred scriptures of the Jewish and Christian faiths mean anything at all. They mean that we love and care for refugee children. If you cannot do that, you cannot call yourself a person of faith. A healing presence is also a healing mind. It makes the connections between imperialism in Central America and the so-called war on drugs, our own addictions, and the military prison complex and what is happening in the news. Healing, of course, begins with a correct diagnosis. And like Sears and his friends, if we want peace, we must identify the source of injustice. The national and international things matter, but so does the local. You might be a healing presence when you support our community's efforts to reduce domestic violence, when you go to a block party, when you tutor at a school, when you shovel your neighbor's walkway, thank you. Everything we do that builds community, that reduces harm, that is healing work, makes peace. You are a healing presence when you give someone who needs one a hug, with mutual consent, of course. You are a healing presence when you say happy holidays in mixed company and normalize diversity. When you say in response to hurtful words, that's not okay. You can be a healing presence and a presence for peace when you yield in traffic, when you write a positive comment on social media instead of a snarky one, when you give someone your full attention, when you tell someone that they are important to you. But don't just think about the world or the local or the interpersonal, because the healing presence, the transformation of trauma, also needs to happen in you, in each of us. How do we do that? How do we move ourselves toward peace so we are less reactive and less fearful, more willing to build those connections that make the world and our own lives beautiful? Well, step one, I might recommend, is come to church. Good job. Seriously, community and singing and reflection on the things that matter, the spiritual life, prayer, meditation, moments of silence. These things should bring us healing and a sense of peace in our lives. I hope they do for you. Another of the key insights about emergent strategy and peacemaking is the importance of what is called somatic practices, which is to say, being kind to your body. Take a walk, get a massage, eat something that feels good to you, sleep. We started with sleep for a good reason. Don't you know that the world would be much more peaceful if we all had a good night's sleep? Pay attention to your body, to your own heart. You are worthy of love and care. You are worthy of love and care. This may be the most essential part of making a world of peace, loving yourself and treating yourself with care. If we all did that, every one of us, we would not need to dominate others when we felt the sacredness of our own heart. Breathe. Slow down. These most basic practices can help us be people of peace and kindness. From the most intimate to the and personal to the widest and most global, the work of peacemaking has the same character at every level. It involves loving ourselves and each other, stopping the harm that is happening, healing what is wounded, and making connections that sustain us in better ways of living. This is how we make peace on earth, peace in the community, and peace in the heart, with healing love, with creativity and kindness, not grand gestures, but everyday acts of decency. In this season of patience, of waiting, of Advent, I invite you to prepare room in your heart for the spirit of healing love to make a home. In the spirit of the season, I invite you to work to comfort all exiles here, and to the aching heart bid cheer, to turn all hearts to peace, to long for dawn in every broken soul, and render every act a prayer. Let us make peace our way, our home, and our future. Let us sing together.